We can begin our eighth and last opening your heart class by chanting the Metta Sutta again. Is on page 59. Metta Sutra. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank So, and if you are at home and you don't happen to have pen and paper nearby, you might want to get that. Just a very brief, I mean, you don't have to write it down, but I always find it helps to write these things down. So, Sangha as refuge and testing ground. So Sangha, in case anybody here doesn't know, Sangha refers to the Buddhist community. And Sangha is one of the three jewels or treasures of Buddhism. So Buddha is, the teacher, our own awakened, our own potential for awakening. The Dharma is the teaching or truth, and Sangha is other people. And it's considered that all three of those are essential to the path. So famously, in the Pali Canon Sutras, there's a story where the Buddha admonished his disciple Ananda. Ananda was one of his closest disciples, and Ananda had said, admirable, I get a tongue twister on that, admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie, Ananda said, was half of the holy life, which is, that's a lot. That's half of the holy life is having people around you like this, having good friends. But the Buddha replied, "Don't say that, Ananda. Don't say that. Admirable friendship, admirable companionship, admirable camaraderie is actually the whole of the holy life. When a monk has admirable people as friends, companions, and comrades, he can be expected to develop and pursue the Noble Eightfold Path." And then, before we get to our little exercise, a couple more quotes. So this is from Thich Nhat Hanh. There is a saying, if a tiger comes down off his mountain and goes to the lowlands, he will be caught by humans and killed. If a practitioner leaves his or her sangha, it becomes difficult to continue the practice. Taking refuge in the sangha is not a matter of devotion, it is a matter of practice. Certainly, people can and do practice on their own, but certainly for most of us, we would not practice as diligently, as deeply, as completely, as when we are with others. And then this isn't a Buddhist source, but this is Charles Vogel, who's wrote The Art of Community, Seven Principles for Belonging. He says, I define a community as a group of individuals who share a mutual concern for one another's welfare. It's distinct from a group whose members may share ideas, interests, proximity, or any other number of things, but lack concern for one another. Such groups can have huge memberships, like the Museum of Modern Art, the American Medical Association, or Greenpeace. But their members do not share any strong social connectedness. When we do find people who share at least some of our values, there is a real opportunity for friendship. It doesn't matter if this is at work or on our block or while volunteering in a distant country. Building community creates a venue for friendship, and friendship defeats loneliness. In deep community, we can be vulnerable and still know that we belong. So people here tonight, a good crowd in both the Dirt and Cloud Zendo, are at many different stages of relationship to the Sangha jewel. I'm not sure if there's anybody here for the very first time, but they're for most of us, a very few of us, like Dan, were raised in a Buddhist setting. Very few of us, right? So that was a first time. It was the first time we walked through the door of a Zen center, and we're like, okay, I don't know about this. We'll see. So this is the first time, which can take a lot of inhibitions to get over. Then there's kind of trying it out. Maybe you like it right away, maybe you don't. Well, who knows? Depending on our character, we may be wary or eager. We may feel like we belong right away, but there's folks who have been around for ages. I think Shoketsu and Jim, and forgive me if I'm missing anybody else, Gathlode, we date back to meeting in a room in the nearby, it was the United Methodist Church. We borrowed a room, we kept everything in a closet, and we pulled everything out, set it up in their little community room, and put the Buddha on a piano bench, and started out there. So there's people who have been around and they've seen, all this time, who are very committed. There's people who, over the sense of years, begin to really have a sense that this is like have a sense of ownership. I've heard it said by some of the folks, like, I want to be part of this community for the rest of my life. Like, that's just unclear. So, we go all the way from just, it's your first day to just, you're here for the long haul. So understanding that there's many different relationships to Sangha, and you may have relationships to Buddhist communities before this one as well. I thought we could take a moment to reflect, and you could write down at least one thing you have found challenging about engaging with Sangha, and one thing you have found rewarding. And if you have a specific story to mention, that would be really sweet. If you happen to think of something like that, but something that's been challenging and something that is rewarding. And then I don't know that everybody's going to want to share, or that we'll have time to go around to everybody, but it would be wonderful to hear from a lot of folks to get this going. Are there any pens left down there?
I'm sorry.
All right. We want to share something, Bob?
I guess I jumped the gun. I was anticipating that you were going to say, would like anybody like to say something? I'd like.
I was just about to.
Okay. My two things are, first, the challenge is that tea time is too short to talk to anybody. I mean, you can't even get your tea and say good morning and it's over. Okay. The challenge, I'm sorry, that's the challenge. The reward is Sangha is an opportunity for me to be of service, and that's highly valuable to me.
Total.
Hello, everyone. The rewarding thing is meeting other people like myself and nerding out on the Dharma with people. It's just like so fun. And then the challenge is meeting other people like myself and facing what that means, the mirror, so to speak, that is put up to your face in the Sangha. So, yeah.
And there's a way that, I mean, when you encounter people like that out there, it's easier to just be like, they're just, kind of write them off or judge them or something. But then when somebody's in Sangha, like, I'm supposed to be doing that. And kind of challenged not to just take the shortcut. Thank you. Mick?
Yeah, so my challenge is staying up late because it's 11:25, and it's not even necessarily particularly the staying up late. It's just that, by the time 10 o'clock rolls around, I've had plenty of time to think about all of the reasons that I need to go to sleep or I gotta do this thing. And so that's always a challenge. The reward has been, I almost even mentioned it in the breakout rooms kind of tangentially for a while. When I would talk about people that I knew through Sangha, I would call them my internet friends. And then, after a while, it was just like, these people are my friends, like they're my community. And my particular reward was, when I am able to come to Portland and I see people in person, it feels like home. Like when I went to Sesshin, there was just this something magical about being around all of these people that I had come to know over the years, and just sitting in the same room is really special.
Yeah, it many people will echo this, but it has when people come from, and we've only met them via the cloud, I don't just kind of expect that, I don't know, that it'd be a little bit awkward, or like you realize there's a whole lot you don't know about the person, or they seem really different, or I don't know, but it's like it's not a beat is skipped. It's just like, hi. I mean, the one thing is just you can't tell how tall somebody is. Or short, right? So you just be like, oh, I pictured you'd be bigger. Or, oh, hello. That's the only thing. Because here, they're all like this even. Shoketsu.
For me, the challenge was that early on, and I still kind of am uncomfortable conversing with people during breaks, during tea time. I'm a lifelong introvert, and that's when it comes up for me. Although I am getting more relaxed with that. But what the most rewarding thing for me was being Shuso. That forced me in many ways to, to be there for the Sangha every week, and it drew me out in so many ways, and it was very rewarding.
Thank you for your service.
It's my pleasure.
Let's see, Dan and then Isaac.
So my reflection is just on Sangha generally. So as you mentioned, Daniel, I grew up in a Zen community. And so on the positive side, the real tangible support from Sangha during really hard times. So for example, when I was a kid, my dad died. And so we got really tangible support from the community that time. And then later in my life, when my mom passed away, again, there was an outpouring of support. And then just generally, not this sangha specifically, but a challenge that I've experienced, when I do walk in the door of a new zendo, is just getting that kind of personal connection with folks. Because sometimes the study of Zen can be very austere, and it doesn't lend itself necessarily to learning about what people's interests are and the sort of things that you might really connect with, outside of the Zendo.
Thank you. Isaac and then Tyler.
Well, so for me, this is probably the biggest challenge is to get
right. This this is the biggest challenge right here.
Getting up in front of everybody and it's actually getting it's well, but then there's all these people on the screen and I'm just like, so anyways, it's getting easier. So, but and then what's most rewarding is being able to be helpful with volunteer roles and getting to know everybody. So it's been really, really, really wonderful. So.
Tyler, and then Bruce.
Something rewarding. So it's sort of along the same lines as Carl said, but just having group of people that I can nerd out, but also like when I come up when something like I've discovered something is like really meaningful to me, or I've had some like meaningful moment with my engagement, I can tell people and the rest of the world might be like, neat. But then if I come to like, we're like, oh, that must have been lovely. But if I explain it to folks in the Sangha, they get it on a different level and they're excited or they engage and they have questions and like we can like have this moment about it and they can share kind of their experiences. Or just finding ways when it is in our lives. And so it's nice to have people I can talk to about it. Cause again, like my family's wonderfully supportive, but they don't, like, I could say it. They're like, cool. Like, yeah, okay. That's not quite the response I was going for, but it's fine. And then something challenging, and I don't think necessarily it's not a bad challenging, but it's good to have, like Sangha can keep like your ego in check when you think like, yeah, I'm doing really well at this Zen thing. Like, and then someone has this moment where they're just like, they answer a question or have a thought about something we're reading and you're like, oh wow, like that's like it should be like, wow, that's really inspiring. But sometimes it's like, oh crap, they get this better than I do or whatever. And there's this sort of like shoot, like are they a better Zen than I am? And I'm not a particularly competitive person, but those sorts of things come up. And so that can be a challenge, but not necessarily a bad one, I guess.
Yeah, it really depends on our personal karma. And our personal karma is going to be brought out, just like I said last week, people bring it out. And, I am not proud to confess that I am a real, like, Ashura realm kind of person in that, from the time I was little, it's all about, like, I'm looking out there and I'm like, who's better than me that I might like learn from or, curry favor with? Who am I better than? And like, it's just this competitive mindset of just always being kind of defensive and just threatened by, and, you criticize me, or like you were saying, like, oh, now you seem cooler than me, or you got that opportunity and I didn't get that opportunity. And oh my, it's just a horrible, horrible thing to be trapped in. And when I think of how much time I spent in the Sangha and instead of being open-hearted, like allowing that to kind of limit my experiences, it's sad. But it helps you see it as well. And if you can work through it in that environment, then it's very valuable. Bruce, and then Peter, and then Nan. Oh, and go ahead, Ruthann.
Oh, no, I don't want to jump ahead of Bruce.
Okay, well, let Bruce and then you. All right.
Well, thank you, Ruthann. Okay, for challenge, I'm going to just say one word, Dogen. That represents the interesting but complex trying to understand. If you try to understand it intellectually, it doesn't work very well for me.
Yeah.
When that goes to the rewarding part, is once I drop that and I realize that it's really about the admirable mm-hmm. friendship and the camaraderie, mm-hmm. I am never getting worked up here. been involved with such a warm, loving community. And I remember the very first night I came here was 2015. I think it was still just Tuesday nights. It was dark out, and Jim was in the parking lot, and I introduced myself, and people were nice. I was a total stranger, and I've always been kind of shy, and I grew up in a very insecure environment, so I'm just feeling more confident about myself and everything. So,
Yeah.
well, I love you all. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about, and I think we are very proud in building up a culture. We're in the dirt zendo and the cloud zendo, that we really pay attention to people's first experience. And this is a culture which let's call out right now and say, you can be part of it. You don't have to be the greeter. You don't have to, like, if you've been here more than once, you know where the bathrooms are, and you can help somebody feel comfortable because you'd be like, oh, the bathrooms are right down there. And many of us are introverted. In a party, I was like, I'm just gonna sit over here and let y'all. It's difficult, but it's kind of funny when you look around a Zen room, and generally, like, everybody's uncomfortable. Pretty much everybody's uncomfortable. Eric's not uncomfortable, but there's a few of
I
us.
want to go next.
Okay, there's
After
a
Karen.
few of us.
After Karen.
But we just, and asking how people are and where have they been, and because we don't want to proselytize either. We don't want to be like, where have you been? We haven't seen you for a while. We don't want to make anybody feel guilty for not coming or anything like that. And yet, if you haven't been around and then you show up and nobody even notices, that's sad. Sad. Okay, so then it was Ruth Ann,
Nat.
Peter.
Oh.
Okay, go ahead, Ruth Ann, and then we'll figure it out.
For rewarding, for sure. It's the unfolding of something substantial. That's what the practice is, including, of course, the Sangha. Because actually, December 2020, I'd been at Brightway 2 years, but nobody really knew that COVID was going to still be around a while. And I thought, if I can't get physically there, and it doesn't matter right now because it's already, to me, something that's a part of me or my action. And challenge, I live in a senior community, and I think supporting harmony in the community, and I think, oh, every day. But it's my spiritual post-it. So yes, it's cool to the challenge because it's always there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruthann. All right, Peter, Natalie, Karen,
Karen.
and then Eric. So Peter.
Wasn't going to tell on myself, but for the sake of the future me, the future person like me who's new and watching these recordings, I'll go ahead and say it. I think
Yeah.
Domia, like you said, and Tyler said that the thing I wrote down was that I've been here 2 weeks. I've been here 4 sessions of Zazen, and I already feel in competition with students I've never met. It's just does the nature of community and people, specifically people who have that I don't know that orientation. But at the
Yeah.
same time, everyone I've met has been incredibly welcoming and kind and thoughtful. And so there's this like there's a warmth that you feel even when you're also kind of like looking around trying to figure out who sizing people up for no real good reason. And
Yeah.
I think that's a thing that I think is really nice about this community.
And it's something that over time we our trust for it builds up when we not only confess things like we just confessed and nobody shuns us, But also when, like, not just that we've confessed it, but that they see it, right? That we work on stuff together, we're at retreat, we were, you know, like we have interact in different ways. And when you see that, you know, somebody's kind of impatient or kind of oblivious or kind of whatever, and we just hold them anyway, you know, that's what over time you realize, wow. And when you see someone else included, it can be really encouraging. Like they're gonna kick me out if I don't do this right. I mean, I remember at Dharma Rain, there was a woman who was doing, you know, this Jeet Kune Do thing, this, you know, the bells and the singing and whatever. And she just had a terrible voice. Just a terrible, terrible voice. But I loved that. I was just like, this isn't about like doing something, you know, perfectly. This was just like, yeah, everybody belongs and gets to play a part. Natalie.
Let's see. So for the challenging part of it has to do, so coming up here, sharing, but specifically, so I come from an eclectic spiritual background, and I still have ideas that aren't always maybe necessarily Buddhist or Zen. And so I feel like if I'm sharing something, so part of it's my own fear probably of judgment. What do other people think? I'm saying something that might seem a little out there and isn't part of the Zen texts, but I still want to share it. It's still part of my experience. And so that may comes across. I feel, yeah, that challenge sometimes, but I still want to share. And who knows? I mean, maybe it does end up being a Buddhist thing anyway. It's just we can see things through so many filters and languages and ways of perceiving. But I think ultimately that's just my own self-judgment. But the reward, I think, is the sharing as well, being vulnerable. And I think when we are vulnerable with each other, and I really like that in our discussions, it allows for connection. And I'm feeling more of that oneness when we really get to know each other and are vulnerable, and it brings us closer together. So appreciate that.
And that's where we have a term student program, which many of you have participated in at least once, where we start by telling our life story, basically. And you know, you begin to realize like everybody has their stuff, everybody has their pain and their karma and their difficulty. And for me, I mean, everybody finds it rewarding, but particularly from this kind of, I don't know what we want to call it, this, you know, Asura judgmental competitive defensiveness kind of thing. There's very few things that like kind of break through that like that. And it's like people open up. Like most of the time you're just walking around, it's kind of like, I don't know what's in all these people's heads. You know, can feel very separate. But when we really see kind of what's in people's minds and hearts, it's like, oh,
Yeah,
I'm not alone. I'm not
right.
so different. I'm not being.
Right. We find that common ground. Often there'll be themes. I noticed that during the term student program. There are themes coming up for people and can relate.
All right. I think Karen was first and then you.
Yes, Karen.
Okay. Karen.
So let's see. My biggest challenge is just prioritizing the time to be here because I just have a bazillion things going on in my life all the time. So that's my biggest challenge. And I guess that when I am here, it's a challenge for me to participate. So, and the rewards are just numerous. I love the intellectual stimulation. We have a lot of very bright people who have, been studying Buddhism for a long time, and I just thrive on all that, all the knowledge and experience that you guys all share, which is probably why I don't participate much because I just don't feel like I really have anything to add to all that because you guys kind of say it all. And another, the other reward for me is it really, whether I'm here or not, just being involved in a Buddhist group just helps me focus on how I want to treat myself and view myself and treat and view others. It just has helped me immensely not to, get ca too caught up in what other people say that, maybe would have made me feel less than or, made me feel a little less confident or whatever. That doesn't seem to happen anymore. Just that clinging to what other people say. And it's also just helped me give other people space too, and realize that we're all just here trying to do our best. And I don't know, I just learned a lot of really good guidelines of how to just be a more loving person, I think. So I appreciate you all, and I actually do miss seeing you guys when you're not here. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. All right, Eric and then Hannah.
First off, I'm so glad to have gone after Karen. I haven't really talked or seen you, Karen, since I moved to Beaverton, and I have missed you so much. Karen was like my cloud friend. Her and Cassie, we were in groups together, and if you don't know Karen, you are missing out. She's just a wonderful person, and I hope she gets to come to the I just love her. I fell in love with her. So I'm really glad to be here, and that kind of leads into where my things are going. And I want to figure out how to I want to summarize this so that I'm not saying everything because it's a whole other story. A year ago, I was preparing to come to Sesshin, and I would say in the process of going through this year from being on the cloud to Sesshin and then in the dirt, the challenge I would say is not communication as far as sharing information, but communication as far as connecting and some of the follow-up. And I know we've talked about that and everything. So I'm on the Sangha committee. So where's Mick? Mick, I am right now responding to your email. I want to be involved in that part, like the follow-up and everything with people. So there. Okay. Number one, that's the challenge. Number two, the reward. So I'm going to say this now. Last year, when I came to Sesshin, it was after a lot of losses and heartache. And I was on the cloud and I had just this wonderful connection with people. And I got this amazing, which guys, you don't know, someday you'll hear, I'll talk about my grandmother, who was just the greatest Bible teacher ever. And Domio is like the same, but in the Buddhist text. So it was amazing to be hearing the podcast and being a part on the cloud. But then coming here in person first at Sesshin, and actually Bruce was the first person I met. So he's talking about how this core warm group that these people have. Well, I think he's the heart of it. I mean, he's just so friendly and sweet. And then I got to meet, and I got to meet everyone else. But one of the people I got to meet that really kind of changed my life was Isaac. And Isaac and I were doing the tea thing at the end of every night. And I was just a bundle of anxiety and shame, guilt, fear. I was raised Pentecostal, if that gives you an idea. I was closeted until 2 years ago, if that gives you another idea of how this came across as trying to be closeted. Okay. So anyway, but I met Isaac, and Isaac, I kept just messing up. And I was trying to do it right and be a good Buddhist and get everything right. And I just felt like everyone, like I was like, oh, I'm just going to. I don't know who I thought. No one was judgmental at all. No one, not even Domio. And if anyone's going to be judgmental, it's going to be Domio. Well, I'm from Pentecostal. Preachers were judgmental. Okay, that's why. So not Domio's judgmental. But anyway, but we were doing it, and we were on the last night, and I'd worked so hard to get better every night, and I was focusing on that, and I felt so good, and it was such a smooth, and it was the last night, and we were poised, and everything was choreographed. And then I had misunderstood Isaac's instruction and I wound up messing it up at the end. And I just felt horrible. And then I went to go clean up in the kitchen and I think I like was pouring the tea out and I was so like upset and distracted. I wound up pouring it like outside of the sink or something and made a mess on the floor. I mean, it was horrible. And I'm just crying. I'm just crying and crying, which I did a lot more crying last year too. But Isaac, every time, all week long, and especially that last night when things were, he just came over, put his hand on me, and just helped me clean it up. And when I went back to Charlotte, I realized there was, Mick, I love you. I'm glad you're in North Carolina. Okay. But there was nothing else for me there. And, or at least nothing that was better than what I was getting from the cloud. And I moved my life because I could, and I'm grateful for that and that privilege, but also I moved it because I wanted to just immerse myself in this sangha. And the reward, I would say, is all of the connections and the friendships and the camaraderie that is so genuine and so real that it not only saved my life, but it helped me build a better one. And I am grateful to Brightway and grateful to Do and Domio gives good hugs. I don't know if she wants me telling you that, but she gives good hugs for her little introverted little heart, and she can't. But the connections of this community. You know, I jokingly said one time, you know, come for the teaching and stay for the community, because it's absolutely, I mean, it just gets better. And the more we could find a way to connect individually on between the great bar of cloud and dirt, I would love to also find ways to do that, both in class and out off of class. But you get great connections when you're here, and they're so genuine. And it's like whatever religion or non-religion you were raised, the best examples of those things are found here at Brightway.
So Eric mentioned our Sangha committee. Mick and a bunch of others are working on that. So this is part of our strategic plan, making sure that we have a welcoming and warm and connected community, and kind of have all kinds of creative ways to do that. We already do that, the member profiles and the newsletter that Greg are writing, so we get to learn about everybody and see their picture. And there's all kinds of ways that we can be warmer, but there are also end up being challenges. I mean, we don't take attendance. I mean, that would be kind of weird. Maybe we should. I don't know. But we don't take attendance. And so, you look out at what are we here tonight? 25 in the cloud and like 17 here. Anybody add quickly?
52, 42, 42.
42. And then there's people who aren't here tonight who participate regularly, right? So we have maybe 60 people who participate regularly, and we hope to grow. We hope to grow so that we can buy a place, so that we can be big enough to be self-sustaining in the long run. Out of those number of people, if one of them doesn't show up for several weeks in a row, that's hard to clock. And then after a while, you go like, it takes a while. It takes a month or something. And then I don't know, maybe they're just on a trip. Who knows? And maybe they're busy. So to clock all of that and be thoughtful and compassionate is a real tricky thing. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't make an effort, right? So how can we make an effort? So not only are we going to try to make an effort, but also, I don't know, I guess I would say if you are part of the Sangha, that it's a two-way street. Right. If you, it's very easy to get offended by Sangha and feel neglected by Sangha and then go away. And then it's difficult for the Sangha to get its act together and come after you, which ideally they would, but you know, I hope that you will build a sense of connection and trust. And that you will let us know, like Courtney wrote to the member list recently, and she said, "You haven't seen me around because I've had this awful health thing go on." And that was a very like that was a connecting kind of generous thing for her to do to let us in on that so that we could all care, right? So I encourage you to also think about like stay in touch with the Sangha as well, because people do sincerely care. It's just sometimes it's difficult to keep those connections when we're so dispersed. All right, Hannah. Hannah, are you still there? Yeah, there we go.
Normally I'm on a laptop, but tonight I'm on my phone, so I'm like, okay, the unmute button's over here somewhere.
Yes, I know.
Sorry about that. So to echo the sentiment about it being late, please excuse me if I yawn. It's pushing midnight here. But I would say that my biggest challenge was like ending up here at all. Because for a couple of years, like I was the only Buddhist that I knew. So to come and sit with BrightWay, you know, I'm like getting my computer ready and setting up my webcam and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I don't really know my forms and like, what if everybody's gonna be mad at me and blah, 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 things like that. Like, I'm not like a good enough student of Zen to be here, but oh, Paul was the host that night and he was very nice. And then I talked to Coral and she was lovely and I just kept coming back. And I guess that makes my greatest reward is just being here. It's just like most excellent to be part of such a well-rounded, tight-knit community. And I'm so grateful to have gotten to meet you guys, and I really cherish the space that we have here. So, thank you.
Thank you. And Gaffel dates back to the Christ United Methodist Church.
Yeah. Wandered in because of another minister. I don't know if you realize the woman that introduced me to BrightWay went on to become Unitarian. Well, she was trained as a Unitarian minister and became a Unitarian minister in the Navy. So yeah, I've been around for a little while. I was thinking of challenges, and a lot of people talk about the difficulty of talking in the tea room, and I was going to mention that, but some of the stuff some other people have talked about tonight have pointed out that I have another challenge. I don't understand how any of this can be a competition. And why people worry about someone getting ahead. That's a challenge for me to understand. The flip side,
Bless you.
the good thing is that it really, one of the benefits of Zazen is that for 25, 35 minutes, it's just you. Don't have to worry about anyone else, although you can worry about other people because sometimes that's where you work it out. But really, Zazen is just about us and what's inside. And I always think that the thing is to then what you learn there, to take what you learn on the cushion out into the world with you. But one of the benefits is it really gives you the luxury of literally stopping and sitting and doing nothing but being with yourself.
you.
And one last word. I'd like to thank Eric for sharing that much with us. And he has recently showed up at my other community, and I really appreciate him both here in the Sangha and here and when he visited us the other night. Thank you.
All right, we just have a few minutes left, but Leah and Rina both have additions.
Actually, I don't have additions because everything I wrote is what everyone already said. So, but under, so this is very familiar, challenging forms. And I wanted to thank Greg, who isn't here, but for his write-up of forms, which was really useful. I wish I had had that. Overcoming social anxiety and my own perfectionism. That's been the challenging thing. It probably will never not be the challenging thing, even if it's tiny. It's always going to be there. But the rewarding part is letting go of forms and realizing I'm accepted no matter what, even if my forms are imperfect. And actually, I feel like I'm accepted here more than any other place outside of home. And I think just to make it like, you guys don't understand, or maybe you do because I'm saying it, what a social anxiety this is. And at the beginning, when I came here, I was so nervous that I shook the whole time. I was just shaking and I couldn't sleep beforehand and I couldn't do anything because I was just an absolute mess. I had so much anxiety and I'm still like that. But I'm just really good at getting I don't know, this place has taught me through acceptance, just that lake of acceptance that's just there no matter what, has really helped me do crazy things like say poetry in front of people and present precepts. I mean, it's just, it's you don't know what this is like. So I appreciate you all for making this like a thing and possible. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I should say, because I think my takeaway after hearing some people is that I should say what my challenge is, and maybe after that connect with some people to talk about it. So my challenge is that I'm taking Buddhism really casually. And I feel a little bit uncomfortable that everyone is really serious about Buddhism here. And like, it's not something bad, right? Of course, it's great that I think everyone need to just work with what float their boat. And if Buddhism is the way for some people, you know, taking it very seriously is the way. It's amazing. Like, I'm not jealous. I'm like, I'm inspired. But for me, it just doesn't align with my personality. It doesn't align with my other things that I like to do. And it doesn't align with, yeah, I have like a conflict of interest with religions. And I'm like, yeah, no. So, and the challenge is that I feel kind of like I'm not part of the Sangha because I'm kind of like casually coming and going. Yeah, so it's a challenge, but it's still very rewarding because every time that I'm coming, I'm like, oh, I learned so much. So,
well, that seems good enough, right?
Right. Yes, it is.
And it just occurs to me that, like, so I mean, I take it very seriously, right? I did my whole life, right? I'm just a serious person. But I think it's very healthy that I am married to somebody who understands. He took the precepts once upon a time, but also like he doesn't practice.
Oh, really?
That's and it's great. Like
those meaning it's great that you coexist.
But those of us who do take it seriously, I think it's very healthy and helpful to be around people who are just kind of like, meh, you know.
Not in a bad way, no, huh? Like, it's just
but like it helps us not take ourselves too seriously and it too seriously and be, oh, you know, too.
So it's hard for Trekkie to bury a Trekkie.
Yeah, totally. I could totally be just like, yeah, you guys have fun on that. On that, you know, when you're sitting 8 hours a day, I'll be thinking of you, you know, like when I'm dancing, I'll be thinking
exactly.
of you.
Exactly.
And, you know,
and I am thinking of you. Really proud of you.
Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, sweet. Thank you. Thank you for being honest and sharing. Yeah. So it's already a little after 9, but if you want to stick around for a couple more minutes, I just want to encourage you. If you stick around within Sangha long enough, Sangha becomes like family. Good and bad. Right?
Well, I mean, so, it's good.
I mean,
that wasn't the noise of bad.
No, but it's good. It is good and bad. I mean, it really is like family in that many of these people you didn't choose. I mean, they're probably have a little more in common than you do with your biological family, probably, but still, like all kinds of different people. You didn't choose them, and yet you don't, like, they still belong. I mean, there's so many times when I didn't overtly say it, right? But I kind of, you know, told my teacher about maybe what somebody else was doing or what was going on. And, you know, the undercurrent was kind of like, I think maybe we should kick them out of the Sangha. Don't you? I mean, I never would have said it, right? But there was a little part of me just like, I think maybe that person isn't cutting it, you know? Can we just like, we'll just have these people over here, and that person that really gets me the wrong way, we'll have them go away. And then, you know, but of course that never happens, right? That is always just like, nope. Unless, I mean, you have to overtly break the precepts on premises. Like, you have to do something pretty egregious for to get kicked out of a Zen community. So nobody's going anywhere. As long as they want to stay, nobody's going anywhere, no matter how much they rub you the wrong way. Or, and then later on, right, when you get more, if you get more involved, if you've given the Sangha money and time and labor, and you've started to do certain roles, and you start kind of helping with the teaching and all that, now you're, you know, there's politics and there's power and there's weird dynamics and there's all that kind of stuff, that dysfunction, that like, why doesn't that person ever understand? Why do we always clash instead of get along? I mean, so I don't want to scare anybody away if you haven't already experienced this, but just, you know, if and when it starts to feel like that, just remember that is part of the practice. That it is like Sangha. It's not always warm and fuzzy and lovely. The reward for sticking it out and maybe staying in relationship is not immediately clear sometimes, but kind of over time is when we understand why we stick it out. So if you find yourself at some point, for whatever reason, you're disappointed in the way that we run things, you're disappointed in me, you don't think we sit enough, you think we sit too much, you think the study's gotten boring, you think nobody noticed when you got sick, we didn't help this, whatever reason you can possibly think of that you're disappointed and you're thinking, I don't know, I think I might just need to quit going, or find a different sangha or whatever. Just talk to me. Or if there's somebody else in the sangha, some other senior in the sangha that you trust, just talk to me before you go. I mean, if you really need to go, I'm not gonna, I can't make you stay, right? But don't just disappear, because there's profound lessons to be learned from this whole messy thing. Sangha as koan, trying to make our community as great a manifestation of our aspirations as possible. But acceptance of imperfection, because you're human beings and any human institution is imperfect. So I will leave it there. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom
beyond wisdom,
Mahaprajna Paramita.
Thank you, Dorian.
Hey,
night, Karen.
Thank you. Domio.
Yeah.
Domio.